From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 473, Hacking a Country with guest Troy Hunt. Recorded Tuesday, May 3rd, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brendan. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today has been scaring the snot out of me for years. Yes. It's Troy Hunt, the web security guy, MVP, serial plural site author, creator of Have I Been Pwned? And I've been pwned 3 times now. I've been notified by that service to let me know that my account has been compromised somewhere. I think I got caught in the Stratfor one of the originals, the Adobe one, and the Patreon one. Yeah, I even remember.
There you go. We got 2 in common. I was in Adobe and Patreon. There you go. I was in Triple O Web Host. Much to my surprise as well, because I never created an account on Triple O Web Host, but courtesy of a password reset, I now have control of somebody else's account.
Oh my goodness. And I remember reading about the Triple O exploit, because you were doing everything you could to try and help them, as I recall.
Yes, yeah, it's that old sort of lead a horse to water analogy. I tried so many ways to get in touch with those guys over the period of about a week, and eventually I got to the point where I went, you know, screw it.
I've done my due diligence, right? Like, there's a point where it's like I can feel good about it. I tried everything I could. If you guys don't want it, well, I can't make you do it.
Yeah, look, it's a funny thing too, where as much as you want to sort of be ethical about the whole thing, there are some organizations that just push the right buttons where you go, look, maybe you actually deserve this to some degree, and I really don't want to endorse what people are doing, but it's just hard to feel sympathetic for some of them.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. These hacks are criminal events. There's a law here, and it's been broken. But the fact that people are, you know, it's like your house has been robbed and you just don't seem to care.
Well, I would actually understand it more if it was just your house being robbed,
right?
Because that only impacts you. It's when it impacts everybody else that's
right
in the system.
Good point.
That's what gets me.
Yeah, you know, all of your customers are hurt also.
Well, there was an interesting one, actually. I don't know if you've seen this, because it's literally just gone out within 12 hours, but there's a Minecraft-related site called Lifeboat. They had just over 7 million accounts exposed, which I put on the Have I Been Pwned last night, and a journalist sort of did their usual journal thing and got comments from them. And it transpired that they knew about it in January.
Wow.
And we're here now 3 months later, and they decided not to tell anyone. And their rationale – this is the crazy thing, right? So their rationale was – if we tell people, so what they did is they said they forced a password reset on everyone, but
right,
it sounds like they didn't actually email anyone. They just forced a password reset, I assume, at login, which has got different issues. But their rationale was, they said, if we told people, the attackers would know that they have limited time to exploit them, and it would have made things worse for them.
Okay.
Wait, hang on. Oh. And it is in cases like that where my sympathy wanes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty hard to be happy about that. Now, the piece I've been looking at, I think the one that I called you on immediately and said, okay, we better talk about this, is the Philippines.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? That's interesting at many different levels. And part of the level here is cultural as well. So we've got to remember, for folks that may not be familiar with the Philippines is a real sort of emerging market.
Sure.
So they still have very low incomes. They've got all sorts of problems that many of these emerging countries have, everything mm-hmm. from poverty through to terrorism problems through to corruption in government. I mean, they've got a lot of serious issues that we normally don't have to deal with at that scale in Western countries. Now, amongst all of this, they're also modernizing rapidly and digitizing things rapidly. They're going to electronic voting,
sure,
which is going to happen in May.
And I could look at that as just, it's a cost-saving thing. You're not automating for fun. It's a less expensive way to let people vote.
Well, it solves a bunch of problems because the voting's biometric as well.
Right.
So when you think about a population that has a small percentage of internet connected users as well, having people that are registered and identifiable via fingerprints is actually a pretty neat idea. But the problem in the Philippines is that their COMELEC, which is their commission of elections, seems to have, what's a nice way of saying this, misplaced 55 million records.
Holy man.
So, yeah, they've misplaced it. Another way of describing it is that some kids somewhere figured out how to use SQL Map, which is what appears to have happened. In fact, I saw a video of allegedly Lulsec Philippines. So someone has dug up that old name, Lulsec. Yep. Saw a video of them using a free browser plugin that helps you exploit SQL injection risks. And they're just browsing around the site going, yep, we'll just modify this parameter. Let's see how much stuff we can get out. And allegedly, that was the attack vector.
Wow. There's only 100 million people in the Philippines. So 55 million, that's probably every voter in the country.
Yeah, once you take out the kids and whoever isn't registered to vote for other reasons, that's a pretty significant number.
Yeah.
But as I said, there are many things that made it interesting. And one of them was that they had a lot of people's passport details in there.
Right.
And that is rather sensitive. And they had passport details in there because they've got a lot of voters who are offshore,
right,
living in other countries. So they stored the passport details in there. And the really curious thing about it is they had a number of data attributes that were encrypted. So the first name was encrypted. The last name was encrypted. The email address was not encrypted. And guess what's in most people's email addresses?
First or last name.
First name. Dot last name. The passport details were not encrypted.
Oh.
Which you would think is quite sensitive. They had other information like your height and your weight. And to be clear as well, this thing had, I think, in total about a dozen different tables from MySQL databases, and they had different data attributes in different tables and then different levels of completion for different rows. But be that as it may, a bunch of people had other personal attributes in there. But the one that made a lot of the headlines is they have fingerprint data in there.
Yeah.
And this is the really interesting thing, because on the one hand, you go, well, it's fingerprints. It's like, what do I have to do now?
Unique identifiers,
you know, and reset them. Or what happens? Because it sounds really scary. But of course, there's also the question then of, well, what actually is the data?
Yeah.
Like, what's the workable attack with this? Is you actually
anything? What do you do with fingerprint data?
Well, it's, yeah, could you do sort of a pass the hash kind of thing and basically circumvent some kind of access control,
right,
like the voting machine? Could you reconstruct the person's fingerprint if you had a bit of, you know, gummy bears and, you know, whatever
else?
Yeah,
could you actually draw a fingerprint if you had the image of it? I don't know if that's possible.
Exactly. And my feeling, without knowing a lot about the way these biometric systems work, but talking to others, it seems a lot of them are very bespoke implementations, and just having this data from that system may not actually allow you to do much.
Right.
And regardless, the fidelity of it wasn't really high. I mean, we're talking about dozens of bytes here, which I can't imagine is enough to reliably reproduce a fingerprint, but it might be enough to effectively compare a hash of it.
Yeah, it must be some kind of CRC or hash or something that
yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So that doesn't sound as powerful as, you know, if you can use that data effectively, you could bypass it completely.
Yeah, so I don't think it's a really serious one. But the other angle that made this one a bit interesting as well is they've been really reluctant. The government has been really reluctant to actually acknowledge the incident.
Sure.
And it's curious because the government has been actually active on Twitter. So one person in particular who I engaged with on Twitter has said, we acknowledge that the hack happened. And they did get their website defaced as well. So it's kind of a bit hard not to acknowledge it.
They literally left a sign. We were here.
So there's that. But then he said, but we're not, we haven't verified whether the data is correct or not. So basically whether it's been fabricated.
Right.
And I sort of had a very mini debate with who I assume is a Filipino politician. And I said, it happened 3 weeks ago. The data is all out there. Like, if it's not taking you 3 hours, you're doing something wrong.
Right.
Like, what is going on here? And I verified it very quickly. And the way I verified it was very simple. I took some data And I asked some people, is this your data? And they said, yes. And that was it. So
yeah.
I contacted some subscribers from Have I Been Pwned? And I said, look, you know, this thing has turned up. Would you help me verify? And a bunch of them came back and said, yes, this information is correct, and even gave me things like a piece of the passport number
nice.
That I could compare with the data breach. So it wasn't just, you know, saying yes to everything.
Interesting. So, I mean, and again, I think this is one of the advantages you've got right now, Troy, is you have this interesting data set of people who care enough about their security to be on your service.
It makes it really interesting. So I've got about 380,000 subscribers on there now. So that's free subscribers.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't cost them anything. They just put in an email address. They get an email with a token in it, and they verify that they actually want to receive emails. So that's 380K verified ones.
Right.
And an incident like this happens, or the lifeboat one I just mentioned, or the day before, the beautiful people one. In each one of those incidents, I get in touch with these folks and say, look, I've got this data. It's particularly volatile for various reasons. Can you help me verify it? And they're always willing. It's a great source of breach verification data.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, so now the question is, do you list 55 million Filipinos on Have I Been Pwned?
If I had 55 million email addresses, I would. And the scary thing is that that would only be a drop in the bucket because I'm well over 300 million now. But there were only about 280,000 actual email addresses in that breach.
Interesting.
So, you know, when you think about voter records and you think about where this data might be collected from, particularly in an emerging nation like the Philippines, you're not going to have sort of comprehensive No. information for everyone, especially things like an email address.
Well, the problem is for folks like us and in the tech field and so forth, we just presume everyone's on the internet, and we're wrong. But wrong by a lot. We're just living in a bubble.
It's really interesting how we get these sort of social perceptions of how online works.
Right.
And look, I guess there's particularly outside North America, there's this view that in some parts of the world, they may view the internet as being an American thing.
Right.
Very yeah. American-centric thing.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to see the cultural differences, though. I mean, things like Indonesia, for example, used to have an astronomically high proportion of Firefox users, 90%+ of people were using Firefox. They're on Windows.
Right.
They're using Firefox. And now it's about 90% of Firefox and Chrome. Or things like China, for example. China has more internet-connected users than the next two nations combined.
Right.
So that, I think, is India than the US. It used to be more than the next four, which was India, US, Japan, and the UK, I think. And this country is sort of shut off from the rest of the world in many ways.
So they have their own internet.
They have their own internet, and they don't really like their own people seeing other people's internets mm-hmm. many of the time.
It's very true. And they have replacement products for everything. You know, there's the Weibos of the world. Like they've got all their own little world over there. And little is a misnomer. It's huge. It's a massive world.
It is, and it's so different and so isolated in so many ways. But look, it is a fascinating thing. I mean, we are much more culturally diverse than what most people probably realize.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's very interesting to think about it. I mean, just to close out the whole Filipino story, like you have all the information for an awful lot of passports. You're well on your way to being able to fabricate a ton of passports if that's something you want to do. Like, it's really interesting to think about the broader consequences of so much personal information.
Well, that was part of the reason why I created the service in the first place, where I thought it is really interesting to look at the volume of information that is out there about you, and not just from one incident, but when you start tying them together. Yeah, you just mentioned you've been in three different incidents. So if we took the Richard Campbell data attributes from those three different incidents and mm-hmm. combined them all, we would have a much richer picture than if right. there's just one leak.
Yeah, so one leak isn't the end of your life, but each one of these leaks is kind of cumulative. It's all going to provide a little more associatable information about you.
Well, so long as it's not Ashley Madison, and then it might be the end of your life.
Right.
You know, that's the other thing. That was sort of unprecedented, where we actually saw really serious human impact as a result of a data breach.
And I saw that another dating site, Mate One, also got exploited.
Yes, I loaded Mate 1 in just the other day. That was exploited last year. But just within the space for about the last week, there's been Mate 1. There's been Naughty America, whose name is probably somewhat self-explanatory. There has been the Beautiful People one, which was like I say, only about 36 hours ago. And there has also been the Fappening Forum, a forum for discerning gentlemen, I assume gentlemen, to discuss photos of leaked nude celebrities.
Oh, Lord. You do get to see an interesting side of the internet with all these exploits, too. But now your decision-making around Ashley Madison with the, you know, sensitive data set, you're getting to use it more. You thought it was a one-off thing, and clearly it's not.
Yeah, so this was the decision to say that some data is sensitive and that it should not be publicly searchable on Have I Been Pwned.
Right.
And you're right. I implemented that for Ashley Madison, and I then applied it retrospectively to Adult Friend Finder, which is effectively the same as, yep, as Ashley Madison. Friend has a very specific meaning in that context. And also applied it to YouPorn, and effectively now that's pretty much been the criteria. Is it a dating site? And you know, I've classified Mate 1, which for all intents and purposes is normal everyday person dating.
Right.
So is it a dating site or a porn site? And if it's either of those, then look, like they shouldn't happen. And yes, they still have enumeration risks on those sites where you can find out if someone exists there anyway, but my site isn't going to be the one where you discover someone.
Yeah, that's fair. Troy, give me 1 second to pay the bills, because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by Chef, the automation platform for the DevOps workflow. You can use Chef to automate and manage it all, infrastructure, runtime environments, and applications. Chef works in the cloud or in your data center on physical servers, virtual machines, and containers. Get started with Chef today at chef.io/runasradio. I don't want to do the same old story again of you need to lock stuff up tighter and so forth. Like we've talked about this a bunch of times. I live with a password manager now. My passwords change themselves on a routine basis. I just don't know what it's going to take for us to get beyond all this, because there's no amount of the strength of my password that's going to help with people being irresponsible with data.
I think that when you consider the nature of the data that's been released in a bunch of these recent breaches, that the password is sort of becoming one of the lesser problems.
Right.
So the same old issue is definitely out there. I mean, a perfect example in the case of this lifeboat data, one of the people who verified their data, the Have I Been Pwned subscriber, mm-hmm, who should know better if they're on Have I Been Pwned, but she turned around and afterwards wrote a blog post about how she had that incident and that disclosure actually helped her realize that she was using the same password everywhere.
Right.
So that is definitely something that still happens. I think we have much better controls now for those who want to use them. So obviously password managers are one, and there's some really good ones out there these days. Mm-hmm. Multi-step verification is another.
Yep.
Like having these things in place, if they're not there, you're just doing something wrong. And if
right,
they are there, the impact of these data breaches becomes isolated to that one site. Now that may still mean that you have some really sensitive personal information disclosed, but they're not going to take your password and get into your Gmail.
Right. And I think there's also the behavior part of when you do get a message from a service you haven't been doing on saying your password's been changed or anything like that, you need to react.
Yeah, that is probably wise.
Yeah. You know,
this is the thing, because often when you hear a site say, for security measures, you should change your password, the immediate assumption is, okay, well, you've been breached. Something's gone wrong there.
Right.
But that's generally good advice to take. I guess the hesitation I have is I normally like to know why it is that I am changing it as well.
Right. Well, and then, you know, I mean, LastPass makes it so easy for me to have a new password every month on PayPal so that I simply don't know that password. You know, that's irrelevant to me entirely because, you know, with zero effort, tooling matters in that respect. It's nothing I would ever do by hand.
You're right. I think the tooling is really important. And as good password managers are, though, I still feel that they're not easily accessible by a lot of people.
No. So we are not the normal, we're not the, you know, the Filipino masses here, right?
Look, that's it. And in fact, to go back to that Filipino scenario related to that, this is why I think things like Touch ID work so well, or any sort of biometric authentication. Yes. You know, I often see people jump up and down and say, biometrics isn't authentication. It's identification, and we shouldn't be using it, and so on.
Right.
Well, yeah, but look at it in the broader ecosystem. This is the difference between someone using ABC123 and actually having something kind of decent and usually not needing to know it and just logging on immediately with a thumbprint. So when you look at it in the broader ecosystem, it makes a lot of sense.
What do you think of Windows Hello?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sort of on the fence. Like, I like the premise. I guess that I have just ingrained into muscle memory the ability to log on to Windows with this password that I use so consistently on so many things.
Yep.
Try connecting to Azure without remembering, you know, without having to go to a password manager. You will go crazy very quick.
Yes.
So having that sort of stuff's important.
Yeah, just the sheer volume of counts. But the Hello effect is really interesting. I've got a Surface Book and set it up. You can do it on I think it's the 950 XL to the phone. But you touch the device. There's pluses and minuses to that. It looks at you. It's actually using an infrared part of the spectrum. It's not just a regular optical camera, so it only works with certain devices. And that does your recognition. What's funny is when it doesn't work. What's also interesting is, like, locking my laptop to walk away. I was at a conference last week. Go to lock my machine to walk away because, you know, I'm surrounded by geeks. They will do things. Ask me how I know. I lock the machine. It unlocks itself because it sees my face.
Because it sees you.
Yes. Yeah. I literally had to stand up, get out of the camera's view, then lock the machine.
So, well, you need like the tape over the camera sort of job.
Something, yeah.
I think the interesting thing with all of these alternate means of authentication or identification, if you really want to take that biometric route, it's not that they are better security. It's that they're different security.
Right.
And they have different risk profiles and different usability profiles as well.
That are probably not well understood as well.
Oh, definitely. And this is why we have cases like the Philippines where we're all going, oh, what does it mean when biometric data gets leaked? We're not quite sure.
Yeah.
So it is something that's going to keep evolving. And I think more important than anything is that we've just got to sort of understand what are the strengths and weaknesses of this approach and what makes sense for me as an individual, because it's going to differ between people.
It occurs to me that if I had a Filipino passport right about now, I'd want to replace it.
Well, this also sort of raised the discussion of how sensitive is things like passport data.
Sure.
Because for me, I'd be thinking this is a pretty important identity attribute that I would use to prove who I am. I'd give someone a passport number. You put this on a loan application or something like that. Curiously, other people have come up and said, well, you know, depending on where you are, this actually may not be viewed as such a sensitive piece of information. And certainly we've not seen anything, at least publicly, from the Filipino government saying, okay, we're going to reissue passports to those who are compromised, because as of yet, they haven't even acknowledged that it actually got leaked.
But the cost for them is not trivial. That's a lot of passports. But if you know, the other element of a passport, irrespective of using an ID within your country, is this is the device that other countries utilize to recognize you are who you say you are when you enter their country.
Well, that is another interesting topic, which is different views of identity verification attributes. So I'll give you a good example, credit cards. So you'll see a website get compromised and they'll say, we got compromised, but good news, credit cards are okay. We didn't lose the whole cards because we complied with PCI and we only had the last four digits visible.
Right.
And the last four digits is what you then use to identify yourself to Amazon or to Apple. And there's all of these social engineering precedents where accounts have been compromised because people had the last four digits of the card.
Right.
And if you even look at a receipt that you get, a physical receipt, you go into the store, you pay for it with credit card, many of them have the last four digits of the card.
And the reason that Amazon uses those is because they're not considered PII because they're so publicly available. And now they're using it in an identifying role.
You're right. And the challenge now is that you have conflicting views of the sensitivity of identity data.
Right.
Another example will be things like your phone number. So is your phone number itself secure enough to do authentication with? So can we send you a one-time password or something via SMS to your phone and then you log on?
Well, it's not the number that's valuable then. It's the ability to receive the call.
It's the ability to receive it.
Yeah.
And a lot of sites do this. And I think for the most part, it's a pretty good mechanism. And then you see telcos say, well, hang on a second. This is not necessarily meant to be a secure channel of delivering messages.
Right.
You know, there's obviously there's the risk of spoofing SIM cards and receiving other numbers and all sorts of other things. So it's just interesting when we get these colliding worlds of views about the sensitivity of data classes.
Well, let's not even get into the stingrays, like the fact how much the potential exploits around the cellular network come into play.
Yeah, and I mean, now we're sort of talking about intercepting people's cell phones, which apparently they don't have a real sense of humor about, particularly in the States, if you have one of those.
Yes.
It's not like the Wi-Fi pineapple where you just order it offline.
Yeah, those are for the FBI only. You do not get to play. Yeah, very, very interesting set of problems. And I don't feel like we come out of this with any advice, per se. It's just sort of a shaking your head going, wow, now that it's hitting at the country level. You know, and this is not unprecedented either. The U.S. federal government had a major breach of a bunch of employees. Like what is it going to take? Well, you know, what is the turning point for folks? So they're actually we're going to do something, or we're going to, heaven forbid, start passing laws.
Well, actually, on the unprecedented point, you're right. There was the OPM incident in the U.S., but also just around the time of recording, it wasn't just the Philippines. It was Turkey that lost millions and millions of records. They were only about 50 million, not 55.
Only.
And and Mexico the other day. And I think Mexico was about 90 million or something, wasn't it? I mean, that's just a huge number.
I had not looked, but that would be a huge number.
Seems feasible.
are these just random things, or is this an effort by professional hackers to escalate the stakes? Here's the piece, 93.4 million Mexican identities.
So what you'll see on that piece with Mexico is there's a security researcher called Chris Vickery. And Chris has been very good at finding exposed Mongo databases. Hmm. And services like Shodan, the search engine for the Internet of Things. So Shodan is particularly good at finding this sort of thing. And in fact, if you go to the Shodan search engine, you'll find that rotating on the front page, it talks about the ability to find internet-connected things, including internet-connected refrigerators. Now, I'm not sure what you do with the fridge once you find it.
I'm not
However,
sure what the fridge can do.
Fridges on the internet.
But, well, I don't know why you put the internet into your fridge. It can't tell you what's on the inside, at least not yet anyway. But it's just another surface area to be exploited.
Well, I think that's a very important point. So, we've got to sort of make a bit of a conscious decision. What do we actually want to connect? I bought one of these little Wemo electric Wi-Fi connected switches the other day because I like to be able to turn the coffee machine on before I go downstairs, which sounds kind of lazy, but I'm sort of laying in bed reading my messages. I want my coffee hot when I get down there. And it allows you to have schedules and things like this, but it does that by being externally accessible.
Right.
So you got to fire up UPnP and port forward and do all this other sort of stuff to make the thing inside your house connected to the coffee machine internet facing. And I just don't want to do that. Like that is just not important enough for me. So I'm happy to have the device isolated here within my network, but I'm not going to open up any ports that allow anyone externally, legitimate or not, to talk to my coffee machine.
Sure. But why? Why?
Unnecessary.
And it's complicated enough that the average person can't do it anyway. So it has to be someone technical who decides that's a good idea.
Well, what we've got to remember too is that all this stuff becomes so easily discoverable because the likes of Shodan and many, many other tools and researchers and bad guys out there are just simply scanning ports across the IP address range and seeing what responds.
Right.
And if you've got something there and it's open, you're effectively broadcasting it.
And I guess that's the point. These are not massively clever people targeting you. It's literally broad scale scanning looking for easy marks.
It is. And then particularly when you do consider the likes of Shodan, you've got the index there. So this is almost sort of the world of Google Docs, right? Where we're just searching for information that has already been found and then figuring out what we want to exploit.
Right. Yeah. So the only thing that this fellow did that did this find was search for the right thing. Mexican voter data.
Yeah, I do then question, and I think his intentions are ethical, but I question the decision to download 93 million records just to check.
Yeah.
I would have thought at the point where you go, isn't that interesting? There's an exposed database here on the internet. Mm-hmm. That might have been where you send Mexican government or whoever a message and say you might want to fix that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once you have $93 million, like, what do you do with it?
Look, I would hope that what he would do with it is use it for research purposes or other ethical reasons, but I can certainly guess what other people would do with it.
Yeah, no kidding. It's just huge amounts of data, and it was already out there, like you said. It's just that he found it and then talked about it, exposed it. But I'm with you. I don't buy the security by obscurity thing either.
Yeah, it's that is – I don't mind that as an additional layer on top of fundamental controls. Look, if people want to obfuscate some URLs and so on, but then they've got the appropriate authorization mechanisms behind it, you know, maybe not such a bad thing. And to that effect, stuff like not putting – administration facilities in /admin. Not right. Such a bad thing. It's going to make it harder to find.
Text files full of passwords.
Well, there's often that. But if you do stand it up in some sort of obfuscated path, well, then you still want to have controls around that. Just thinking people won't find it isn't good enough. We've actually seen just in the recent week or so, a lot of talk about URL shorteners actually being enumerable.
Yes.
And people standing up things like personal or sensitive documents behind that, for example, could be a deep link into a shared Dropbox link. It's got an obfuscated URL.
Yep.
You have a URL shortener, which you can then enumerate because it's got a limited character set. Now you've got a problem.
Yep. Just didn't even think of it. You were presuming there was obscurity there, and there isn't any.
No, well, the security is you have a link, which isn't really isn't really security at all.
Yeah, not at all. So you're going to be on the road, I imagine. You'll be telling these stories and more.
I'll be regaling people with tales of various security things. So I will be I'm going to be in Brussels next week, actually. So we may go to air after that, I assume. But yeah, I'll be at Techrama.
This gets published after that, but that's fine. So you were in Brussels.
I was in Brussels. Brussels was lovely. We had some good beer. I will be, assuming future tense, I'll be keynoting at NDC Oslo.
Yeah, congratulations, dude. Good gig. Yeah, that's a great show. You know, we've been, Carl and I have been at it since the very beginning, watched it grow up and just an awesome audience. So it's cool to see you on the keynote roster.
Yeah, look, it's NDC is the one event where I just say, yep, just tell me when
for everyone. It's the other side of the world for you.
Just about everything's the other side of the world for me. Sure. So I'm kind of used to that. But look, I'll do that and then I'll spend a bit of time. I've got, in fact, I'm doing a public workshop in London, in about mid-June. The links are on my blog. So if people want to come along with that, they can do that. And then I might have another one or two public ones around Europe on that trip as well. So I'll publish all that when it comes up.
Fantastic. Mr. Hunt, always a pleasure to talk to you, as well as frustrating and disappointing.
Yeah, well, it's going to be the same next time, don't you?
It's going to be the same next time. I just, you know, we'd hope people would get better, but it is what it is. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, mate. Always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.